All right. As we answer the tough questions about Christianity, I invite you at any time to stop me in the middle of my sermon if you need to talk to me, if you need to ask a specific question, if you want to debate, if you think that I'm off track, if you think I haven't supported my argument well enough, then you can just stop me at any time in the sermon, just raise your hand and ask me a question or give a comment, and you're more than welcome to do this. I don't want to stand up here and ramble on for an amount of time. I want this to be a dialogue between you and I, because that's how those dialogues are going to take place outside of Searchlight Ministries, in your homes and in your schools and at work. You're going to have the opportunity to talk with people. And we're going to be talking about a very difficult question. It's often very emotionally charged, and that's, aren't all religions the same? Now, some people thought that this question's never been asked before, or it's not being asked a whole lot. But I just spent some time with my in-laws, and my Heather's aunt just asked that very question, or she made it as a comment. Usually the comment comes out like this: aren't all religions just kind of the same pathway up to God? Or if people just sincerely have a faith, you know, won't God reward them for seeking them, whether they're a Hindu or a Buddhist or whatever? Aren't they all just kind of the same, you know, roads up the mountaintop? So a lot of people still have this belief. And also I think it's good for us to examine these other faith systems. And this is the reason why. This was a comment I made a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to really come home to us. And that is, why do you claim Christianity as your religion? I'll tell you why I claimed mine for a whole lot of years. I claimed it because my parents were Christian, and I just ended up going to a Christian church. And that's how a lot of us have been raised. If we claim lifelong Christianity, we say, well, we're just doing that because our parents were that way. Well, have you ever examined the other religions? Have you ever taken a kind of a closer look at them? Because I'm sure a lot of Hindus say that. I'm sure a lot of Buddhists say that. Sure, everyone that has those religions, oftentimes they are that way because they've just grown up that way. When does it come the time for us to examine them closely and make informed decisions and come to true knowledge and come to the Lord? I think maybe today's the day. So what I have done is I have just taken five major religions: Hinduism, which is mainly an Indian religion in the country of India. It's very centrally located there. It's not a worldwide religion yet, though it's definitely gaining a lot of popularity. And then there's what's called the three geographical religions, and that's Buddhism, Islam, and Christianity. Those three seem to span all over the place. And then I threw in here, because it does hit close to home for us, especially here in America, Mormonism and some of the things that they believe. What I've done is I've taken these five religions and I've asked eight simple questions about them. What is the basic worldview? What's their view of God? What is the origin and the destiny of the world? What's the origin of humans? What's the destiny of humans? How do we receive knowledge? How is that stuff revealed to us, the revelation? And then what is expected of us in order to obtain whatever that thing is out there, that reward? Maybe we as Christians would say heaven, but how would we go about obtaining that thing? And so I laid those out for you. I expect you guys to kind of know this. I had to admit, I haven't looked at this material for a long time. It's been, I think I calculated out, like 9 years since my world religions class at Concordia University in Irvine with Chuck Mansky. I know a lot of you guys know Chuck Mansky. He's a great guy, and it took me a while to go back and remember all this stuff. But this helps us answer the basic, very basic question of, aren't all religions the same? And after we finish just this cursory treatment of these religions, you're going to probably come to the same conclusion I did. So I want to run through these just for knowledge sake, and then we're going to move in to some deeper stuff. Okay, Hinduism. Hinduism. I also put like a keyword next to them, maybe an overall word. And also I'm taking what's called classic religion here. There are so many different offshoots, just like there are so many different offshoots of Christianity. We just can't list them all. I'm kind of taking the classic, the majority feel of these religions. So Hinduism, the word I chose there was organic. They're very big into, not like eating soybeans or anything like that, but they're big on earth and being one with the universe, things like that, trying to connect with things. So that's why I chose that word, organic. What is this basic worldview? Well, the universe is profoundly one. It goes through surface changes and cycles, but its ultimate nature as expression of the divine does not change. So The world is an expression of the divine. Well, what is that divine? What is that God? And that the God is Brahman. And it's characterized by a mind or a life force. So it's not a personal God. It's this impersonal creative force, a mind. And it expresses itself often as a flame. So if you see a Hindu god, it might show as a flame. And it takes many different shapes. What's the origin and destiny of the world? The world goes through endless cycles of creation and destruction, but has no real beginning or end. So the universe to them is eternal. Matter is eternal. This earth is just had been destroyed and then reborn as something new. So it's just kind of this endless cycle of death and life. You hear a lot of that organic stuff coming through there. Origin of humans. Like the world, the individual has no known beginning, but goes through countless lifetimes, the nature of which is determined by karma. So they follow a reincarnation thing, and it's all based upon what things you do and what things you don't do, that karma that that follows you around, the kind of a life force. And what's our destiny? Well, we go through a series of lifetimes, and it may include episodes in heavens and hells until one transcends karma through God realization. Wow, this is pretty amazing stuff. I don't know exactly what they mean by it, but they know what they mean by it, and that is that they go through life and they just keep living and dying until they finally self-realize that they themselves can join that God, that Brahman, that life force. And then revelation, the Vedic scriptures, the Brahman priesthood, the gods and God-realized saints as expressions of the One. And then you follow a guru as a spiritual guide. And this is what's expected. You follow Dharma and Greg through rituals, behavior, and... No, you follow Dharma through rituals, behaviors, and righteous deeds as one seeks moksha. That's their big thing. They want moksha. And moksha is that great liberation from this world as we are reunited with the one Brahman mind life force. So if you hear people talking about moksha, they're probably Hindu. And so you have to have rituals and behavior, righteous deeds, and that will get you to self-realize the godhood of Brahman, and you get that moksha, and you do that by practicing yoga, meditation, or devotion, and it's usually under the guidance of a guru. That would be their equivalent of a pastor. But it's very much more individualistic as they try and obtain that Brahman life force. Make sense? That's just a cursory treatment. I could not go into all the details about the Hindu religion. Pages and pages have been written about it. But this, again, gives you eight major questions or points that show you very quickly that not all religions are the same. There might be similarities, but they're never quite the same. And one religion that is very similar to the Hindu religion is that of the Buddhist religion. Started by a gentleman. His name was not Buddha. It was just some guy, I can't even remember the guy's name, I have it written down somewhere, but he was a guy that wanted to try and find out a little bit more about who God was. He was a regular farmer like everyone else. At the age of 40, he left his wife and children and started traveling around with a bunch of monks in order to try and find God. And one day while sitting underneath a tree, he touched the earth and he said, "I am not going to leave this place until I get it." He wasn't quite sure what he was looking for, but he said he wasn't going to leave. And then he entered some trance-like state and had the Four Noble Truths given to him. And wow, it was pretty interesting. He was given the revelation, and then he became what was called a Buddha. And there's bunches of Buddhas all over the place. Those are just people that have obtained kind of like a godhood-type state. Let's go through this. Buddhism is very psychological. You want to talk about beating yourself over the head mentally, this would be that religion. Their basic worldview, you're going to see a lot of similarities. Reality is an indescribable unity. Humans find themselves in a realm of suffering governed by karma. So karma is back, but suffering is how they often define themselves. That's one of the four noble truths that was revealed to this gentleman. God is an unconditioned reality beyond all opposites, beyond good and bad and light and dark and kindness and hatred. It's beyond that. oftentimes they call it Nirvana or the void. You want to know how the band got its name, Nirvana? This is where it came from. The Nirvana, the place where God dwells or is God, the void. Okay, origin, destiny of the world. Again, while the cosmos may go through cycles, it has no beginning or end. And same thing with humans. An individual is a process of cause and effect rather than a self. To this, there's no beginning or end. It's kind of a losing of oneself in order to try and join the Nirvana. Revelation through the Buddha, who attained full enlightenment, and the scriptures attributed to him. So he wrote down some things. The big one, if you've ever heard of the Four Noble Truths, that is the Buddhist revelation that was given to him while he was sitting under the tree, having his hand on the ground, praying that he would be enlightened. And so what is expected? To do good, religious, and moral works that gain good rebirth, to seek nirvana by meditation or related practices. So you go around trying to do good so that the next time you die, you can come back better, you know, better looking, better finances, better place in society. And then as you do so, you can attain a better enlightenment that way. And you do that a lot through that meditation, that psychological brain whipping in order to get you to get that nirvana. That's Buddhism. Woo! Any takers? No one wants to cross over yet? Okay. Islam. Now, here we have a religion that is very similar to actually our own Christian tradition. You will hear a lot of the same things, but yet they differ on some very major points. Islam. The big thing about them is that they are monotheistic. They worship one God. They always talk about one God. That is huge to them. Including anyone else that comes along and claims to be God. We know someone that did that. They would say that was totally blasphemous and not from God. That's their view of Jesus Christ. Okay, their basic world view, the world is for humans, but under the absolute rule of God. God is sovereign, personal, revealing himself and giving specific guidance to humanity. The origin of the world, created by God. Destiny of the world, to be destroyed on the last day, the day of judgment. Origin of humans, created by God. Destiny of humans, to be judged on the last day and receive reward or punishment in the second creation. Wow, this sounds awfully familiar if you've ever taken a catechism course. Revelation. Now, this is a big difference. The revelation in the Quran given through Muhammad, the last and greatest of the prophets. Muhammad was a gentleman that was trying to receive revelation. He claimed that Gabriel, the angel, came and started giving him major information, and it was collected over 22 years. And all those assemblings of sayings that Gabriel gave to Muhammad were then translated and put together in a book called the Quran. And one of the reasons why they're so amazed about that is that it was assembled in 22 years. Our Christian Bible took thousands of years. It's different letters from different people, where the Quran reads more like a philosophy textbook, giving a lot of good, quick little sayings here and there. What is expected? What is expected to create, to get to heaven? To worship and serve God in accordance with his commandments, to observe the five pillars, and the rest of the Sharia. The Sharia is their doctrine, the way they understand the Quran. So it's like their teachings. It would be kind of like a church. When they get together for church, they are taught the Sharia, the doctrine. And then there's the five pillars. Let's see. Does anyone know the five pillars out of curiosity? Let's see if we can assemble them together. I say that because I know most of them. I always usually forget one. Yeah, one is you have to say that when they say that Allah is God, Allah is not a personal name. Allah just means God. So when we say God, they're saying Allah. You have to say Allah is one. That's a big thing. If you say that, that's the first pillar. Second pillar, another pillar that you have to do is you have to pray five times a day at certain periods, very specific of when you have to do that. You have to observe the fasting during the feast of Ramadan. Ramadan, it's based on a lunar calendar when they have this huge, major ritualistic tradition of fasting, and you cannot fast during the daytime hours. So when sun rises and sun sets, no food, no water. The bummer part about it is that the lunar calendar moves according to our calendar, So there's oftentimes the Feast of Ramadan lands right in the smack dab center of summer. And so all day, during the hot hours of the day, no eating, no drinking. So we got that. They have to make a holy pilgrimage called a Raj. Hajj. They travel to Mecca in order to fulfill a big piece, a pilgrimage, which is what Muhammad did when he traveled to Mecca. So that's four. See, I always knew I was going to forget the fifth one. Does anyone know the fifth one? I can't remember.
I know there are two pilgrimages.
I think that's definitely joined. Yeah, I think that's joined.
I had a girl in one of my classes that was Islamic, and she had to take two. Like,
yeah.
One when she's younger, and then a different one when she's older.
Yeah, they might do different types of pilgrimages, but the big major one, the one to Mecca, was, you know, that's big stuff. Does anyone know the fifth one? Oh, well, research it. Go on the internet or ask me afterwards. I know I should have just wrote that. I'm probably going to write them down for the next one. So the five pillars. If you follow the five pillars, if you obey the commandments and follow the Sharia, then you are going to go to heaven. If you don't, you go to hell. So they are very exclusive in their religion as well, as they say, if you are not Muslim, then you're toast. You're gone. That's the Islam tradition given through Muhammad. Muhammad never claimed to be God. He just claimed to have the access to God, and that he was given that special revelation. Yes?
I think we should point out that they reject totally the Trinity.
Yes, and that's the big thing, because they talk about how God is one. And that's the same thing with Jesus. Their view of Jesus Christ is that he actually never even died on the cross. That Judas, am I right on this? That Judas, that there was a mistaken identity, and Judas ended up dying on the cross in Jesus' place, and Jesus just took off, and I think he ended up like in Egypt or something like that.
Well, the point being is that they do recognize Jesus as a prophet.
As a prophet.
And where they get the big hang-up has to do with that kind of death would never, ever, ever happen to a prophet. God would never allow a prophet to go through that kind of indignity and that kind of brutality.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they can recognize Jesus as a prophet, he
certainly did
not for that.
Certainly didn't die on a cross, and that's where that mistaken identity. And Jesus was the second best prophet that ever came about. Who was the first best prophet? Muhammad, right. And because they follow a tradition of escalating greatness of prophets, that the next one is always better than the one previous. So Jesus was pretty good, but along came Muhammad, and he got even better revelation, and because of that, that's why they follow him. Yeah, pretty interesting. Hop on some websites. They're very fascinating as I was trying to go through this. All right, Mormonism. Mormonism hits close to home. There's a lot of Mormons. Their basic thing is in the state of Utah, the city of Salt Lake City. You know the reason why they ended up there? Because everyone thought it was too hot and everyone would leave them alone. So they ended up in Salt Lake City. And that's where Joseph Smith set up camp. Mormonism was started by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Smith after getting special revelation, again, special access to God, and through the angel Moroni and some plates and some translations and stuff. And that's how they ended up with some of their revelation. Let's go through this. Their basic worldview. Oh, yeah, and their big key is eternal progression. That's big. If you ever go to a Mormon worship, well, it's not kind of a worship, it's more like a teaching service, or if you talk to Mormons, what they're taught in Sunday school, I even put down the quote of what's taught in Sunday school. It's eternal progression is their big thing. Man was placed upon the earth as the offspring of God, as an embodied spirit to undergo the experiences of an intermediate probation. So y'all are on probation. That's why you're here. Who is God? God is eternally progressive and has advanced from his original manhood. And here's that quote that they teach to Sunday school children. As man is, God once was. As God is, man may be. So God was just simply a human on another planet at another time who attained godhood, was granted this place called Earth, and has populated it, and given spirit children, and then we came down to earth and were embodied and given bodies, And in doing so, we have to somehow follow this Mormon rule. And if doing so, as God is, man may become. We can become our own gods through doing certain good, right, and salutary things to attain that level. And it's very specific in some of the things. It's kind of actually exciting, you know, if you wanted to be the god of your own planet, I invite you to become Mormon. Now, women, I don't invite you to become Mormon because, well, I don't know if you've heard about what happens with you guys, because you guys are only saved through your husbands, which is why Mormon women are very submissive. If I was a Mormon gentleman and attained godhood and was given my own planet, guess what I get to do? I get to call whomever I choose. I don't have to call my previous wife. I could call anyone. You know, Claudia Schiffer, Mrs. Schwarzenegger. I could call anyone, right? Ray Schreiber. I could call anyone in order to come and have celestial sex with me until the end of time and populate spirit children and then put them into bodies and put them on earth and have them do the same thing. So that's why Mormon women are very submissive. Y'all don't get your own planet. You just get to hang out with your husbands who get their own planet. Women, I don't invite you to become Mormon. That's not very good. Okay. So, origin of the destiny of the world. It was created by God to inhabit his spirit children, of which there's an eternal progression of world by those who have achieved godhood. Do you see kind of the length of, you know, how this could keep on going forever and ever? Because how many gods are going to be created from earth after following the Mormon rule? I mean, who knows how many planets are going to be populated, and then those planets can populate more and more. Do you see how it just keeps on going? And then, so we are spirit children of God separated from him to come to the earth. And if we obey his commandments, we will be judged and rewarded according to the degree of our obedience. Now, the revelation, big. They do follow the Bible, but don't try and pull out the NIV version on them. They will slaughter you, or they won't even talk with you. You have to use the King James Version because they believe that that was very rightly inspired. But even then, you can quote the King James Version, and it's only if it is rightly and understood correctly translated. So they can kind of wiggle out of a certain few other things, even from the King James Version. So they're big on the Bible, but only to a certain degree. Their big thing also is the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon is not their doctrinal textbook. It's more of a history book, but that was what was revealed to Joseph Smith from the angel Moroni and the progressive revelations through the prophetic line. So they can change their mind if they so choose through the prophets of Joseph Smith and that direct lineage. If someone gets a different revelation that contradicts what the Bible of the Book of Mormon says, so what? That's okay, they say. They can just keep following whatever else is new. That's why the Book of Mormon has been changed often throughout the years, because it had to coincide with what the revelation were given. So what is expected? Obedience to the laws and regulations laid down by the priesthood, and ultimately that he reaches perfection by continual advance and eternal progress. They have no basic view of hell. Their thing is that everyone kind of goes to the same place, and even there we kind of progress. But some of us are going to be rewarded better than others. They don't mind the Christians. We do some great moral, good, ethical things. We'll kind of get, I don't know, somewhere around the second or third heaven. That's pretty cool. But if you want to get to the top heaven, and then from there you can get into the inner circle, that's when you become God yourself and obtain your own thing. That's Mormonism. Slightly different viewpoint than what Christians say. Christianity, characterized by a man named Jesus. Basic worldview, a world made by God but fallen far from harmony with his will. Jesus Christ bridges the gap between God and humanity. In this situation, faith and love are required. God is a sovereign, personal, all-good creator God. Origin of the world, created by God. Destiny of the world, the end of time to be judged and then remade as a paradise of God. Origin of humans, created individually by God. Destiny of humans, judgment and resurrection on the last day. Eternal life. Revelation, supreme, this is a big one, because this is a lot different. Supreme self-manifestation by God in Jesus Christ, the mediator, and then the revelation in Scripture. That's where we get our revelation. So as you take a look at this, can you say, are religions all the same? 2 + 2 = 4, and 2 + 2 = 44. One of them's got to be right. Or all of them have got to be wrong. It's either we're all wrong or one of us has it right. You can see that you cannot have all these different things given and understood. We cannot understand God in these very contradictory ways and about basic worldview and the destiny of the world and humans and revelation, what's expected to. They are so radically different. So on the surface, we can easily say that not all religions are the same. So what separates us? And also, I'd like to also just step back a moment and say that's why we've been going through the series about who is God, who is Jesus, what about the Bible, what about the resurrection, in order to establish through truth and fact that Christianity has the goods. Throughout all of the stuff, it has been, all the evidence seems to be pointing to Christianity as the right view. Okay. Then, yes.
I hate to do this, but you talked about Jesus. What do Mormons teach about Jesus?
Jesus was a good guy. He was the firstborn of God. He was the first spirit child that was born. Lucifer was number two. So that was pretty cool. And Jesus did come down just like a human, just like all of us, though he was kind of closer to God because he was a firstborn of God. But when he died, and he died for forgiveness of sins, he did not die for all sins. And that's a major, huge difference than what we preach. If you are a Mormon and you kill someone, blood of Jesus ain't going to do you squat. You're stuck. There's certain sins like that. And there's probably some other major differences.
The major difference is that you have to work and work and work and behave yourself and work.
Yeah.
And they come and check your house and make sure it's clean if you're a lady. It's not a nice way to live.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The Mormons, they need to come and check my house and get mine all cleaned up. Because I'm just a big old slob leaving clothes all over the place and everything. But, you know, in some respects, they have it correct. When you have to tithe to the Mormon church, you have to give them a paycheck stub so they know exactly how much to charge you each time. If you are not fulfilling your obligation, they send over 3 accountants in order to help you with your finances. Now, I don't know about you, but I would actually enjoy having a couple of accountants come over to my house and help me with my finances. That might actually be good. Yeah.
I was going to say, yesterday I was talking to a guy at my work, and he's Mormon. And he was telling me that if a guy in your family commits suicide, that all of your family is can never reach the highest.
Oh, really? Yeah, you're kind of blocked. Yeah, to attain that highest level is boy, you got to have a lot of working and a lot of luck, too, that things like that don't happen in your family.
Well, and then he was not naming them planets. He was naming them celestial, terrestrial, and... There's another one. There's like 3 names, but they're not called planets. There's the levels of planets.
Yeah.
But then I was like, so, but you don't call them planets. And he was like, well, I haven't been to church in 3 years. And I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, it the eternal progression is where you have to, and that is their major core doctrine. You can ask almost any Mormon about eternal progression, and they're gonna say this right here. And as you can see, that's vastly different than what we teach with Christianity. Yeah.
Spiritual hell, the first level of heaven.
Yeah, it's kind of like spiritual hell, but it's not like a place of torment. The only reason why it's hell is because hell's definition is absence from God. So yeah, we as Christians, we will either land in number 3 or number 2. But if we land in number 3, that just means we're without God. But it's not like a bad place. You know, it's probably like Cleveland or something like that, you know. Not too bad, not too good, you know. Yeah, so that's what happens to us. Yeah. So as you can see, and this brings us then to the basic, and that's why I left what is expected of Christianity. What is expected of Christianity is vastly different than every other religion that is out there. Can anyone tell me what is expected?
Faith.
Pretty close. Brian?
Perfection.
What is expected? Perfection. Oh, man, you want to talk about this? Yeah, Matthew, let's open it. That's why I had you grab your Bibles. Let's look at Matthew. Matthew chapter 5. I can show this straight from the words of Jesus, straight from the Lord. This is the basic difference between us and every other religion out there. The basic difference is that the stuff that was given to them, their divine revelation, were laws and commandments that they could actually keep. When you have the 5 pillars and the 4 noble truths and the 8-fold path, you can actually attain those things if you just kind of whip yourself into a much better shape. And then Christianity comes along and says, what is expected? Perfection. Matthew chapter 5. Man, I'm glad no one left so far. It's like, man, I want this Christian stuff. I'm out of here. Yeah, Matthew chapter 5. This is kind of Jesus' opening dialogue with people. And it's very fascinating because up until then, the Jewish faith, and remember, Jesus was a Jew, they had all the, I mean, they didn't have 10 commandments. I believe it's like 623 commandments that they have to follow throughout the Old Testament. They had strict laws and ways to live. And that's why they had the huge religious group of the Pharisees that thought that they had actually been able to follow all these laws. I mean, that's a lot of laws. 623 laws is a lot of laws to follow. And they were trying to get it right. And along comes Jesus, and he says, yeah, the bar was set here. Guess what? I'm setting it up here. Yeah. Check this out. Matthew 5. Where am I at? 17, verse 17. Do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. Because a lot of people were thinking, man, I'd really like to get rid of those 623 laws. I've not come to abolish them, but fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Oh, you're going to love this one. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commandments will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. He just raised the bar. He said, you know what? Even the Pharisees haven't gotten it right. You have to be better than the best in order to obtain it. Go down to verse 48, Matthew 5, 48. How do you like that passage? Pretty plain and simple. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And if you look at the headings between those, he talks about love for enemies, an eye for an eye, oath, divorce, adultery, and murder. You can hear throughout those paragraphs how he's raising the bar. He says, you've heard it long ago, don't kill. Well, guess what? I tell you, if you harbor hatred in your heart, you've just broken it. And they're thinking to themselves, yeah, you know, I haven't murdered, I haven't killed. Oh, I did? Shoot. They're thinking that they got it, and he says, no, take it one step further. You've heard it said long ago, don't commit adultery. I tell you, look at someone and you think that thought, you're just done. And if you're guilty of breaking just the least of these commandments, you're not worthy of entering the kingdom of heaven. Same thing with an eye for an eye. And love for enemies. Listen, have you ever read through this eye for an eye? And I love the eye for an eye is really funny. You've heard that it was said eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Let's have an experiment. No, I'm just kidding. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. Especially in California. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Oh my goodness. But the bar has just been raised incredibly and stinkingly high. You know, a lot of you are probably curious why Chet came in here and wanted to give me a high five. Heather's doing the very same thing over there with the children's worship. She's created all these little different religions. These different religions with these different things that they have to do. And one of them, I guess Chet got volunteered for the love religion. The love religion where he had to go around and give people hugs and say nice things about it. One of the things, he had to come in here and give me a high five. They had the backwards religion and the physical fitness religion and all these things that these kids could possibly attain. And that's every other religion that has ever been created. They are attainable. And along comes Christianity and says, bar's too high. You're never going to do it. And I'm sure that Jesus back then probably caused a few heads to turn and thinking, I'm not going to follow you. But he had something about himself, an authoritative teaching that was vastly different from every other thing. Again, all the other religions, how did they receive their revelation? Through one man who had somehow made the connection with God. What does Christianity claim? Jesus as God actually came himself. He wasn't going to rely on getting it wrong with someone and giving bad transmission or causing anyone to maybe doubt. Because sometimes when you hear people say, I've gotten special revelation, and they start a new cult, sometimes you think to themselves, maybe they just ate some bad steak last night. Yeah, and then maybe what they're saying is wrong. Maybe it comes from an ego. Maybe it's a humanistic point of view. How can we be certain that it's God that's talking? So God says, I'm not going to be able to give my transmission that way. I'm going to come in the flesh. I'm going to come and do it myself. And a lot of people are probably still thinking this stuff is too hard. Because you're right. Someone slaps me, I usually slap back. Someone wants to sue me, I'm going to fight it. I've been praying for my enemies. I haven't cleaned up my pure thoughts. I've not been able to refrain from that phrase that the Bible says you could be in danger of hell. And that's, you fool. Did you see that? Did you see that? Matthew 5, 22. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Raka is answerable to the Sanhedrin, but anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. The bar is way too high. You cannot attain it. I don't care how hard you try. I don't care how psychological you get. I don't care how many times you whip and beat yourself into submission. I don't care how much you try and seclude yourself. You will never make it. And that's the difference. And yet there's still good news. There's still something that, again, you had alluded to, which was almost right, because we need to have faith in someone that could possibly do it for us. And that's why the beginning part of Matthew, the Matthew 5:17, was so important. I kind of skipped through it and just kind of read through it rather quickly, hoping you wouldn't pick up on it too much. But did you hear it? Do not think I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. He is the answer. The bar is raised way too high, and there was only one person that could get it. There's only one person that could attain it. The only person that could ever fulfill all of the commandments and the bar that's been set so high is God himself. He was the only one that would be able to do it. And that is the difference between us and every other religion. God had to come down in the flesh and handle things on his own. And that's why Jesus makes some of those audacious claims. Look at the bottom, the claims of and about Christ. Why could Christ make such radical claims as, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through Muhammad or Buddha or moksha or psychological evaluation. No, through me, because the bar is too high. You can't do it on your own. You need me to do it for you. There is no name under heaven by which man can be saved except the name of Jesus Christ, Philippians says. Mark 16:16, whoever believes and is baptized shall be saved, but whoever does not believe shall not be saved. A lot of people claim that Christians are intolerant. It's not a question of intolerance. We're given a body of literature that has Jesus, God himself, claiming these things. For us to try and manipulate and twist what God has said is dangerous and downright wrong. We are not intolerant. If you want to talk about someone being intolerant, you talk about Jesus being intolerant. 2 + 2 = 4 or 2 + 2 = 44. Someone that believes that 2 + 2 = 44 and I say you're wrong and they claim that I'm intolerant is, I think, just unfair. 2 + 2 = 4. So what's the real question? What is the real question that people say? I know that when most people say all religions lead to the same God, all of them are pathways up that mountainside, they're usually speaking out of ignorance. They just have not examined it. In fact, that's what most people that say, I don't believe in God, or they just have not examined the evidence. And those that have, well, it's one of two things. You're either lazy or you're afraid. And tell me, I've been there. I've been on both of them. And I think every Christian has. I think a lot of us have been Christians again. Why? Because our parents raised us that way. And we've been too lazy to find out if it's really the truth. And we need to sometimes go on those quests and journeys for truth in order to find out that what we are practicing is in fact the truth. Or we're just downright afraid. And I know afraid is big. I know fear captures me often when I read through Matthew chapter 5. And I say, I can't say this. Or I can't do this, or the commandments are so unattainable, and I'm afraid because I'm thinking to myself, maybe God's going to leave me behind because I haven't followed this. I haven't been able to complete this. I haven't been able to do this. There's no way I can. And you're afraid. And that's why Jesus comes. He says, I've come so that you might have life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If we but go through Jesus Christ, the fulfillment of the law has been kept. When you ask Mormons, Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims whether or not they are saved, oftentimes they're going to say, I just don't know. I cannot tell. I cannot tell if I've done more good things than bad today. I cannot find out if I'm going to be the one in the next time I die to go into that moksha or liberation. I've tried to keep the five pillars of Islam, and it's been pretty close, but I messed up once or twice. Does that disqualify me? I think I might have it, but I'm not quite sure. And yet with Christianity, we can be certain, because we can be certain of two things. One is we can't do it, and two, someone came along that did it for us. And that is the major difference. And that's why we talk about Jesus Christ, and that's why we talk about his death, and that's why we talk about his resurrection, because it was that final fulfillment of the law, that the blood was shed so that we could follow in that same footpath, that we can have him. And that's why we talk about giving ourselves to Christ and submitting to Christ and obeying Christ and following Christ, because he is that way. He is that truth. He is that life. That's why we talk that way. And maybe it's time that we continue to talk that way.